I think we'll try and get started. I think before we get to any actions, there's this all information piece. So we'll get started. I don't see the District of Columbia. And I'll call the, I'll see if we can get some silence in the room. Thank you. I'll call the Customer Service Operations and Security Committee to order. This meeting has two items of for information purposes today. The first is a quarterly update on the vital signs and the key performance indicators that monitor Metro's performance in delivering quality service. We would note that today's report incorporates new work for the vital signs, and it's a new vital signs presentation that will allow the board and the public to more readily monitor Metro's performance. The next item is a new part of the committee, which is security. And so we will have with us Public Safety Chief Pavlik, who will provide the committee with a quarterly security update and the information and analysis about Part 1 crimes and an overview of the safety in our metro system. And we'll start by turning this over to Ms. Burnside, or Chief Pavlik, you're first on the list. I'm sorry. It's vital signs, actually.
I'll go first, I guess. Okay.
Vital signs.
Oh, vital Thank signs. You. Okay.
I thought that was Angela. The case. Good afternoon, Chair Hutchins and members of the committee. Today I'll be sharing, as you said, the performance results for the first quarter of calendar year 2016, which is January, February, and March. And as Ms. Hutchins noted, the vital signs has been redesigned for this year to improve readability and some of the graphical displays. We also have a new scorecard on WMATA.com. Another new to this report is a new pilot measure that we talked to you about in January, which is a rail customer on-time performance. And historically, as you know, we reported train on-time performance, or whether trains arrive at the frequency set by the standards, the weekday service standards. Customer on-time performance is a broader measure that includes all aspects of the customer journey, every day of the week, wait times, riding on the train, and getting around the station. So moving to the next slide, let's start with the safety and security results. I'll be moving left to right as I highlight the results shown on each page. So starting on the left, just to orient you to the new look. I know you saw a preview of this in the safety committee. For customer injuries, the numerical result for the quarter is shown in the middle of the circle, and that's 2.3 injuries per million passengers. The target for the year is shown in the blue line in the circle, is less than 1.75 injuries. The red line graphically represents the 2.3 injury results compared to target, and it's red because it's not where we want to be. We also have a red thumbs down for a quick reference. Alternatively, you'll see green where we are meeting our target. So back to customer injuries, although we didn't meet the target, the injury rate did steadily improve over the quarter. Rail injuries declined while bus injuries increased. And those were driven by non-preventable collisions and slips, trips, and falls that resulted from hard braking. Hard braking occurs sometimes to prevent collisions. So two events accounted for about 30% of all the bus injuries. We're emphasizing defensive driving during bus operator training, developing weekly safety tips around frequent accident types, and scheduling safety blitzes at incident hotspots for the bus. Moving to employee injuries in the middle of the page there, we averaged 5.5, an improvement over the first quarter of last year, but worse than our target. The improvements were driven by fewer slips, trips, and falls due to ice and water. We had a winter that was a little worse last year. One thing I'd like to note that is on April 9th, Metro hosted our first Transit Employee Assault Reduction Symposium. I think you might have heard about that. And that was for all employees that are injured on the job due to assaults. It was a great collective effort put forward by Metro leaders, Local 689, Local 922, and the ATU International. And the day included a panel of transit employees, local and international union leaders, who shared personal experiences of being assaulted while on the job and their concerns with this growing issue. We also had folks from New York City Transit and MTA in Baltimore who joined the discussion to share some of the actions that have been successful in their systems. So we It was a successful symposium, and we hope to move ahead to address some of the issues via a series of workshops at the Union Hall to help our employees prevent this from happening. Metro is being transparent about progress against safety corrective actions. The public can go to WMATA.com to find updates on the GM's Customer Accountability Report, also known as CARE, and those link into FTA and NTSB corrective action status. So that is available to anyone who wants to see what's happening. And then finally, to the far right side on the slide, quarter one 2016 crime rate at 4.7 crimes per million was better than target, but worse than the prior year. And I'm not going to say anything more because I have the chief sitting next to me who's going to talk next about that. So let's move to the bus slide. So this page is everything about bus. Starting on the left, bus on-time performance at nearly 78%. Declined 1% in the quarter compared to last year due to an increase in early arrivals, growing congestion in the inner city, and less experienced operators on high ridership routes. Circulation issues that have since been resolved at the Silver Spring Transit Center, as well as severe weather, hurt performance during the quarter. Some of the things we're doing to address this, we introduced a program called StreetStat, and that's a new data analysis accountability management process to address on-time performance challenges. You may have heard of MetroStat. This is kind of the bus on-time performance version of that. On page 20 of the vital signs, you can find additional details of on-time performance by time period. That's a new thing we're providing to you for information. So one of the interesting things is you'll see the best performance for bus at 87% is early in the day before 6 a.m. And obviously there aren't a lot of cars on the street at that time. The worst performance at 70% is the PM peak, which is 3 to 7 p.m. Again, the bus having to compete with all the automobile traffic and really slowing it down. But it overall averages to the 78%. The committee has asked last time for a regular reporting on fleet reliability, and you'll see here that for bus performances exceeding target, that's in the middle of the page with the green. The first quarter was a strong one for bus reliability, and we achieved over 8,100 miles between failures, and that was a whopping 20% better than the same time last year. We've been talking to you about some of the challenges of the fleets. Customers are finally beginning to experience the benefits from some of our completed campaigns on the fleets and our continued fleet reliability analysis. We saw improvements on nearly every type of bus, but I would like to highlight the hybrid and CNG fleets, which provide kind of by far the most service to customers. And those improved hybrid at 41% and 11% for CNG. So that's good news. I think that's on page 21 of your report. Moving to the far right, bus customer satisfaction at 74%, slightly decreased compared to last year. I mean, that was impacted by inconsistent service delivery. Additional factors included bus customers feeling unsafe. We're taking a number of actions to increase this satisfaction number. And that one of those includes increasing our MTPD patrols on buses. In March, I presented to the committee that we had 255 bus stops had been made accessible in the year 2015, and that it beat the board target of 100 per year by quite a lot. At that time, the committee requested further information by jurisdiction on that achievement. We're continuing to collect that information from our jurisdictional partners, but I can tell you what I have so far on that. So for the 255 that we achieved last year, the number improved in DC was 58, Prince George's County, 17, Arlington was 23, Montgomery County, 135, and Alexandria was 20, and Metro was 2. So that adds up to 255. In the interim period, year to date, we have improved another 79, and I don't have full data on that, but of that 79, 14 are DC, Arlington County's 5, Montgomery County's 46, and then some metro stops at 14. I'm still missing some data. So if you add those two numbers together, we're at about 334. And we have provided a list to DDOT of 51 priority stops for accessible improvements. Let's move to the rail slide. Rail customer on-time performance on the left there is, as I mentioned, a new measure that we're piloting for the first time in this vital signs report. Overall for the quarter, we achieved a rate of 74% on time. It was lowest in January at 70% due to rail car shortage issues, weakened track work, and reduced service due to the blizzard. Performance improved to 78% by March as we started to receive some of the key rail car parts that we needed, and track work was suspended for the Cherry Blossom Festival. For this pilot measure, we haven't yet established a target, so you don't see a blue, because we don't have any historical data, so we're kind of forging new ground, if you will. As promised, we're also currently setting up a system whereby customers can view their individualized, personalized on-time scores, customer on-time scores, and this feature is going to be available to registered SmartTrip users on the SmartTrip website. We'll pilot this feature with Metro's Amplify community in June, and then a full launch to available to all customers shortly thereafter. In the middle of the circle there, rail fleet reliability at 48,000 miles between delays was 7.5% worse than the same time last year, dropping to a three-year low in January. Weather and part shortages contributed to lower reliability in January and February. The rate did improve in March to 59,000 miles as peak rail car morning requirement was achieved every day. One of the issues that we've been talking to the committee about is rail cars not available for service due to parts, and that has been improving. So if you look at March, we had 44 cars out of service for more than 7 days, and as I talk to you right now, the number is down to 6. Metro is implementing a rail car program to provide working trains to reduce delays and offloads. In addition, the 7,000 series cars continue to be added to the fleet, as you know. And as issues with those new rail cars arise during their break-in period, we are identifying solutions and applying those to the current fleet as well as the production of the new cars in Lincoln, Nebraska. Mr. Wiedefeld is paying very close attention to this, has regular meetings with Kawasaki, and discussing the outstanding issues. And you can see on page 23 a breakdown of reliability by rail car series. Moving to the far right, rail customer satisfaction at 68%. For the quarter, suffered from inconsistent delivery as well as poor ride quality. In stations, customers' satisfaction was impacted by hard-to-understand announcements and climate control. To address this, we are improving our station announcements. And then as we are currently in the second quarter of the calendar year, milder weather in the spring also helps with station climate control. It generally is going to get worse in the summer when it's hot. That's when the complaints go up. Moving to the next slide, elevator and escalators. System-wide, both of these on the left, I'm sorry, there's only two there, but they both exceeded targets as prior efforts to bring the equipment into a state of good repair continue to pay off. Escalators achieved this performance despite a significant number of those units being taken out of service for rehab or replacement. I'd like to note that despite the success at a system-wide level, we definitely don't see the same level of performance on individual units, and we do hear that complaint from customers. So, for example, those people who are traveling through about 12% of our stations would have experienced diminished availability, and it wouldn't be green, for example, due to scheduled maintenance, you know, on purpose. We took units out of service. So those stations would include Mount Vernon Square. I'm not going to name all of them because there's a number, but primarily Mount Vernon Square, Woodley Park, Huntington, Bethesda, Farragut West, Van Ness, Smithsonian, Waterfront, Columbia Heights, and Glenmont. So I just want to be, you know, upfront that it's not 97% throughout the system. Actions to improve in this measure include continuing modernization program, hiring a reliability engineer to conduct trend and root cause analysis on reoccurring equipment outages, and extending our remote monitoring program so we can identify the outages and address them faster. Okay, next slide. Coming soon. In 2012, MAP 21 mandated, and in 2015, the FAST Act reauthorized FTA to develop a rule to establish a strategic, systematic process of operating, maintaining, and improving transit capital assets effectively through their life cycle. FTA is currently at work on a national transit asset management system rule that's expected in late June, early July, and it's going to do a couple of things. It's going to define state of good repair, require grantees such as us to develop a transit asset management plan. Of interest, great interest to me, is established performance measures for rolling stock, equipment, facilities, and infrastructure. FTA is going to define the measures, and then our job is to set targets for those measures within 90 days of the final rule. So if the rule comes out on time, we would expect to have the targets available by October to submit. And then finally, the rules establish an annual reporting requirement through the National Transit Database. So we're preparing information for the board on what these anticipated requirements are and Metro's preparations to address them. We have a lot of things underway, and we feel confident that we'll be ready to do that. And then finally, as mentioned earlier, we're excited to provide a new tool for our rail customers to be able to track their individualized scores. And that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Burnside. In looking at the last slide and talking about establishing these new measures, we've had a lot of conversation today as a board about the time that we will be dealing with the fast track and any consideration in thinking of how to track it differently than we have. If you think about it, we look at our targets, and then we're going to be having some pretty challenging times for our customers, and what's our level of success? Is there something that we might want to think of in the future, in the coming year, to kind of measure that aspect of it differently than we have when we have thought of a system performing at the highest level? And that's just a comment of mine. Mr. Giancola, a question for me.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the report. You know, it's nice to see how the reporting system has evolved. And I like the visibility of it. There are a few nits and gnats I can certainly comment on, but if you look at an example, the rail fleet reliability, you know, why did performance change, key actions, the little circular chart, which can be confusing because most people would think, well, isn't 100% all the way around? And in fact, it isn't, because you have a different line. So that may be something you may want to look at, because it can be a little confusing there. But I think what I want to say is I really like the new format. And with regard to the key actions in this particular chart, rail fleet reliability, you know, I thought we'd been working on this parts issue for some time. It would be nice to get some projection of when they feel they'll be at a point where things are okay. In other words, the way it's worded is, you know, it's an ongoing action. And, of course, it is an ongoing action, but to some degree we want to get some closure on some of these actions, so I would suggest that. But generally, I want to thank you for the types of report we're seeing here. Comment on Ms. Hudgens' comment on the SafeTrack. We may want, at least for the next year, put SafeTrack on this reporting system. Mm-hmm. In other words, just have it for the next year or maybe a little longer,
sure,
just to keep track of that. So add that to the report, so I would suggest that. But thank you.
Be happy to do that.
Okay. Any other questions?
I'm just a little confused as to how they would do that.
just to get clarity.
I want to see the status, and why not have it in this cap stat, so to speak. What they may want to do is, you know, they have a milestone chart. Maybe mm-hmm. that's what I'd start with, yeah, if I had to do it myself. But yeah. We don't want to tell them how to do everything.
So, I'm sorry, I missed what you said. So your recommendation for
quit smiling, Chief.
For tracking SafeTrack is a particular, you want like to know how the actual SafeTrack program is going, or how SafeTrack is impacting performance.
Have a report on the status of SafeTrack. You know, are we meeting our milestones?
Okay, I got it.
Because
on the safety committee report, but why not have it on the overall report as well?
Got it.
I thought about it. I raised the point of, as I looked again at this slide on reliability on rail and bus and time, and we also entered the additional information now where the customer can see their time that they've measured the trip, and if you look at that, it's going to tell us something. I would call it out of the norm under SafeTrack.
Right.
So that, do we have an expectation for SafeTrack then to what we might want to get as a customer response versus when we are normally in a system that is at the level of a reliability set for the target today? That was my only thought. And then I'm sure you can come up with something better, but it just seems like we will be in it for a year. these targets are going to be different.
I've been talking to my staff about that, and we're trying to think about how we might display that. And you know, you could draw a parallel a little bit to the elevator escalator availability measure. It's one of those measures that includes, you know, when the units aren't working, whether on purpose, scheduled, or unscheduled. So it includes everything. And in a sense, if we just measure on-time performance the same way, it would show a very diminished on-time performance, some of it planned, some of it unplanned. And so we're looking if we can categorize it that way with the data available to us. So we're going to try to show it in a little bit different way if possible.
Yeah, one of the success stories, I think, and we do have some success stories, is the elevator and escalator maintenance. When I came on the board 9 years ago, that's all I heard from people that I traveled with on the metro. And now, well, certainly we have issues, and somebody may have an individual escalator that's down that particular day. The reliability has improved significantly, and because of the programs we initiated. So in finding the good and praising it, I would say we've done a pretty good job in the escalator elevator maintenance area.
Any other questions? Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Burnside. The next is public safety, and yes. Mr. Pavlik.
Good afternoon, Ms. Hutchins and members of the board. First thing we're here to talk about is the crime rate for the first quarter of 2016 in comparison to 2015. Before I go into the details of the report, I do want to make you aware of a change. Previously, through vital signs, the transit police had an absolute number to have less than number Part 1 crimes. So, for example, in 2015, our KPI was 1,900 Part 1 crimes or less. This year, working with Ms. Burnside and her team, we changed it to a rate. So now our rate is five crimes or five Part 1 crimes per million riders, and we're taking into ridership of both bus and rail. So when you look at this chart here, you can see we're slightly below our target of 5.0. And when you look at last year, you do see an increase, and I'll talk what caused the difference. But when you compare the same rate to last year, we'd be at 3.8. So this first quarter, we're at 4.7. One thing I did want to bring out, you know, there's a perception that we have an unsafe system or that crime is on the rise. We do see a slight increase, but the interesting number there in that block there is to talk about the COG report. Got to compare the crime carefully as far as the way they compare crime and us. We all use Part 1 crimes as identified by the FBI, and all police departments have to either have a NIBRS reporting through FBI where everybody reports crime the same way. But which is interesting here is, when you look at crime in the National Capital Region, it's 22 per 1,000. So when you look at our crime, you know, our goal is 5 per million. You know, it just tries to put everything in comparison. So there is a perception out there, which I own as the chief, along with my leadership team, but when you look at the crime rate, it's not as bad as what is maybe perceived out there.
That's very true.
So when you look at crimes against property, you know, we always look at Part 1 crimes in two categories, crimes against property and crimes against people. 63% of our Part 1 crimes is crime involving property. And you can see the numbers there. They've gone up a little bit in some of the categories. I want to talk a little bit about auto theft, and that's why we saw our increase for the first quarter. For the month of January and February, we had a habitual individual going into the Minnesota Avenue garage and breaking into vehicles. These particular events accounted for almost 50% of our crime during that time frame. Subsequently, in late February, we arrested this individual, and then we didn't have any more crime inside the garage. So that's what accounted for some of that increase. You're also seeing some increases in bike theft. It's a weird weather pattern this year, but we saw some increases early on when traditionally the winter months is when we don't see the bike crime. One thing that's interesting with our bike crime, previous years we've seen a trend in Northern Virginia. Northern Virginia was one of our biggest hot spots for bike thefts. We're now seeing that crime has actually shifted to the upper part of the red line in Montgomery County and in the green line from Fort Totten now to Greenbelt. So we're trying to combat that now with, again, encouraging our riders to register the bike with us. We give them a better lock, and is what helps us with the registration, which a lot of people don't realize. It's kind of no different from the TV in your home. You know, you probably don't know the make or model, serial number to it, but if your home's broken into, God forbid, the police are going to ask you that information, and most people don't have that. So what we're trying to encourage our riders to do is register your bike with us. So if it does come up stolen, we can check social media, various social websites to see if it's up for sale, pawn databases, and things like that. We are seeing some nice reductions in our theft snatch of cell phones. That's about a 20% decrease, but that continues to be our number one crime, whether it's crimes against property or crimes against people. So crimes against property, you know, the robbery, force, and violence is one that you see a slight increase there. And what's unique about that in the uniqueness of transit policing here in the National Capital Region is the variance in the classification of a crime varies from the tri-state jurisdiction. But robbery, force, and violence can be, if I pushed you to steal your cell phone, that elevated to a robbery, force, and violence versus if I just snatched it out of your hands. And that varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. The other area here is aggravated assaults. So what we're seeing there now is if you don't want to give up your cell phone, I may push you to the ground, or I may punch you or use a foot. So now that's elevated to an aggravated assault because you used a weapon other than a shove or a push. So it's important that we note those classifications and the differences. Some of those are armed robberies. You know, you saw a slight increase there. It could be an armed weapon implied, where they imply they have a weapon, but you may not see a weapon. But it's still something that we're very concerned with in seeing some of those increases. Obviously, we can talk about the one homicide at Deanwood that occurred this quarter for the poor young man that lost his life over an incident. I'm happy, thanks to the CCTV, that we were able to close that case out within 24 hours of it. It's an unfortunate event, and since that event, we've done a lot of steps that I'll talk about a little bit later to kind of reassure that. When you look at our presence here, that picture there, that's our new uniform. We have secured a contract with that, and actually the first wave of those uniforms are due to come in tomorrow. So we believe will help in that perception issue. You know, this board has heard it many times about lighting conditions, and, you know, the officers traditionally wear a dark navy blue uniform. This is something that's more visible as reflective scotchlight across the back that says police. So with the different steps we're taking, the new uniform, continuing to enhance that CCTV coverage, we believe these are the right steps to kind of squash some of that perception that it's an unsafe system. I'm not going to review all these, but these are some key crime reduction actions that were taken. A couple that I would highlight is the surge patrols. This is something we did after the incident at Deanwood Station. We realize that most of our crime through Metrostat and trending and mapping that crime out, that most of our crime is occurring about 1:30 in the afternoon to about 5:30, 6 o'clock at night. So what we did now was we surged our afternoon officers. Traditionally, our patrol officers that start the day work shift would get off at 4 p.m., and now we're holding them over for 4 hours to help cover that overlap. So now they're getting off at 8 p.m. It's a fatigue issue. You know, it's a little bit longer than we'd like by an hour or two. But at the end of the day, they still have ample time off before their next tour of duty. They're off at 8 p.m., and they don't have to be back till 6 a.m. the following day. And we're seeing it. It's very early on. We've only been doing it for about a month now, but we're seeing our crime trend in the right direction. So it's something very positive. And the other thing we're really continuing to do is, you know, MPD is one of our biggest partners in the region as far as crime and sharing criminals and intelligence. One thing Chief Lanier committed to was they assigned an officer to our command center. So now an MPD officer works our command center during the evening tour, and he's able to hear our radio, we're able to hear their radio, and share that intelligence real time, whether it's the Metropolitan Police responding to a call or we're responding to a call, or if we had a robbery in our station, they fled out the station, we're able to share that information with MPD real time, and then their officers can respond and handle it as well. So we're seeing some really good successes with that, and we believe over the summer months, as MPD starts their summer crime initiative, that partnership's only going to get better over the next couple weeks. We're continuing with our sexual harassment campaign. This is something we started back in 2012, and we're seeing some decreases there, about 11%. This is a web portal self-reporting tool. And the different classifications here, the harassment is more of these individuals who may make lewd remarks, try to attract a young lady, you know, ask her for a phone number, and just be harassing. Does not rise to a criminal activity, but it's a type of behavior we still don't want our riders exposed to. So in the instance where a criminal has not occurred or crime has not occurred, we still take a police information report to document it to see if this is a continuing order, if it's a, you know, something like a harassment issue where they're following the individual. So we're trying to track that now to make sure we're not having any of that, because then you can get into stalking and other issues there. So we're not seeing big changes there, which is a good thing. We think this campaign and continue to do the Sexual Awareness Month and working with Collection Action for Safe Spaces is continue to have a positive impact, because those numbers are really going in the right direction. Out of the 14 sexual assault reports, almost every one of those have been closed with arrest. So we're seeing some good numbers there, and again, that's coming back to our CCTV working for us, and then good information from the victims when those happen. And most of the conduct is usually indecent exposure. It's not a sexual act where someone is committing an offense against a rider. And finally, partnering with bus. You know, most of our bus crime does not reach a Part 1 offense, but it's something near and dear to us. We had the bus symposium that Ms. Burnside talked about. And our crime rate, our assaults against bus operators has gone down significantly this first quarter. We're seeing about a 38% reduction already on a bus operator assaults. And I think that's for a lot of different reasons, from it's a high-intensity enforcement efforts where we're saturating known bus lines. As you may recall, back in October last year, we instituted a new pilot program in the X2 with the new cameras. Those numbers are very preliminary now, but we're looking at reductions of 35 to 40% already. We've had such good success, we're actually looking at piloting that now on the U6 line because we think that's the way to go. And then once we get the data and able to do that, we would hopefully introduce that as our future procurement for all future buses that we purchase, that they have the same exact camera system as the X2 and the U6 will eventually have. And then finally, just to, again, some of that perception that you were out there, you know, when you look at our arrests and our summons and citations and fair enforcement, you know, it's easy to look at numbers and, you know, we got to be careful if that's how you measure success. But I can tell you, you know, all those categories are significantly up. You know, compared to this quarter last year, we've had over 150 more arrests. Our fare evasion has increased by over 500 citations. So we're out there as much as we can be, but we got to continue to use our MetroStat, continue with the public service campaign messaging, and really get the word out. But hopefully with the transition, the new uniforms, hiring some of those vacancies that we have about 30 vacancies right now, and continue to work with HR and get our recruitment efforts up, you'll see an improvement. So I'll be happy to take any questions, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Chief Paddock. And I want to congratulate you because I think the one piece that comes out here is when we look at the numbers and the response is that while we have the crime in those certain areas, the response or the arrest that comes is really one to be acknowledged because it is the ability to do that part. And now how do we get the campaign out that the arrest will occur quickly and thus you shouldn't try, and that should be the message. Thank you. Are there any other questions from anyone? No? Thank you very much for the report. I think it's a very comprehensive one, and we look forward to the other campaigns that can go along with it. Any other business to come? Hearing none, we're adjourned. Thank you.